This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey guys, Rob here. Basically, just want to let you know ahead of time that I screwed up. This episode was meant to come out last week, but a combination of me being busy and also very forgetful has meant I took ages to edit it, or more accurately, kept forgetting to get around to editing it, so it's a week late. And as such, a lot of what they're saying won't quite make as much sense because they're talking as if it was a week ago, you know. So don't get on them for that if they're talking about stuff like the UK tournament, when we all know that that's now led to NXT UK. Obviously they didn't at the time. It's not on them, it's on me. Feel free to throw hate my way, because I like that sort of thing. Don't kink shame me, okay? I'll hand over to them. Hope you enjoy the episode. Bye.
Hello and welcome to the BritWrest Roundtable, the latest episode. I'm Ollie Court, I'm back again after an episode absence, and with me, he's quick, he's glorious, his hair is luxurious, Arnold Furious, Arnold Furious.
Hello! Thanks for that.
that was definitely worth it. Arn, how are you?
I feel better now, I've got my own chant. One of the lads from Progress, I think it was Joel, tried to get like a furious going a la Bobby Roode, but like a full chant. That's pretty good.
Anyway, I felt you needed your own chant because you are on Furious.
Thanks, man.
And it's been a fairly busy time in BritRS, with the latest crop of WWE UK stuff coming through. Phase 2 has begun, and obviously World of Sport triggering that. So it's all shake up again in the world of BritRS, so we're here to cover it. And
fucking ITV, it's always ITV.
Oh yes. We've got to get our Saturday night daytime programming. Because of all that shake up stuff, there was a show, RevPro Live in Southampton, which was sort of caught right in the epicenter of the storm that ITV and WWE UK caused. And I felt because of that, the RevPro show was a lot more passionate than usual. Like, there was just that extra oomph to it, with everyone just working that a little bit harder, Andy Q putting on something just a little bit more special.
It was a hell of a show, yeah.
Yeah, it was really good.
I mean, I'm really fired up for the prospect of RevPro's main feud being Psycho Phillips versus Mr. Moonsault, but we're a few signings away from that just yet.
I've seen Psycho Phillips versus Mr. Moonsault live at the cockpit like 3 years ago. It wasn't very good.
I can believe
Mr. Moonsault is MIA, I believe.
He must still work, because I've seen his name pop up.
Yeah, he was in OTT like last year, but he vanished to the winds of time. Someone who hasn't vanished, though, is Walter or Chris Brooks, and they were sort of the center of this show, their match. It was the best on the show. It was kind of hyped as a main event, even if it didn't end up being that. And also, the Chris Brooks promo afterwards.
Yeah. Well, I thought they'd shifted it off the main event slot because I thought it was going to be like a massive downer. Because I honestly thought Brooks was going because that was what I'd heard. And from what the promo entailed is that he said he'd received an email, he'd received an offer, but he turned it down. But whether it was like an offer as in come live in Florida, or whether it was here's a contract that we might give you a contract at some point if we feel like it offer, I don't know. So I don't know how solid that offer was, but he's turned it down.
Yeah, it was a really great promo from him. And, like, obviously Brooks isn't particularly known for his promo quality, but, like, just speaking from the heart about a topical issue in the world of Britress, you know, it meant a lot, and it came across really well, and it got Refro great numbers on the Twitter by posting it the day after. So, yeah, just a really awesome moment for Brooks, who...
It was a double win.
Declaration of independence.
Yeah, I think it was a double win for Brooks, because not only has he gone out there and shown that when he's got the motivation, the content, and the emotion to back it up, he can deliver an absolute world-class promo. Not only that, his last month worth of work, he's shown me what his ideal role in professional wrestling is, which I didn't even realize. He's wrestled Cassius Ohno and Volta, and for me, those are probably the two best Chris Brooks singles matches I've ever seen. And it's come down to this. It's like, when he's playing the underdog, he's really fucking good. So I just want to see him in that kind of a role going forward. I think they can do that. RevPro and Progress can potentially put him in those kind of positions. Because I think he's always struggled because he has like the indie boy offense, but he's just really tall. So you kind of have him in with somebody like Travis Banks, and I'm just not buying into the dynamic that they've got because I feel like Brooks should be bullying him and he isn't.
Yeah, it's a great point. Like, as an underdog in the last couple of matches he's had against the big boys, he has come across really, really well because he does have that kind of natural sympathy. You know, he is like a soft-spoken guy. You know, he's obviously built up this incredible gimmick with CCK. You know, people want to root for him in that regard. And maybe it's time to evolve the character beyond what he had originally and become sort of a more underdog babyface kind of character, even if he is over 6 foot tall and, you know, stands above everyone else.
Well, it is strange for me to say that, but, like, I hadn't seen him in those positions before. So it was like seeing him in that match with Cassius Ohno, then seeing him in the match with Volta, it just kind of clicked. And I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, this is the perfect role for him.
You just haven't seen him in many singles matches, full stop. And the ones you have seen him, he's been in against, like, Millie McKenzie or Mako Satomura, like, where he can't play the underdog at all. So it's sort of been, it has been a new role for Brooks, and he's kind of excelled in it. And yeah, it's really cool to see him garner so much of a reaction and stand out from a crowd so much by not signing for WWE. You know, we've been hearing all about these, you know, very low level contracts, like IOU1 tryout contracts, which
the promise ring of contracts.
It's just bizarre to see. So I think Brooks, with his, you know, the CCK stuff, you know, with him working everywhere, selling all the t-shirts, that's how he makes his living. You know, it's cool to see him hold on to that independence and that kind of, I hate to say it, but punk rock attitude.
Yeah. Well, I got chills listening to his promo just because it just felt like it was real, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And that's what I like so much about... I kept raving about that Jimmy Havoc promo over Strong Style Weekend. That was just... It was real, and that's what made it so good. And when it comes from the heart, like, your promos are always better.
I think that's what we've got in Britress. Like, it feels a bit more, like, down-to-earth and, I guess, grittier than maybe a lot of other indie places or in Japan. You know, we're not on TV, we're not really mainstream. Like, it's good to see that sort of embraced by someone like Brooks. You know, it's not all flashy and bright colours. It's, you know, just speaking from the heart, as you say. This match and this promo really personified that. So I thought that was really awesome, and it made the show really pop off in that regard. But then also on the flip side, there was the Ginny stuff. and her actually going to WWE UK, and like, I'm not like saying that's a bad thing or anything, just like it's the opposite end of the WWE contract news.
Yeah, the whole Ginny thing in RevPro is just a disaster for Andy Q, a complete disaster. Like, we keep praising him for the way he's able to maintain relationships with different promotions, but I think you go back to January and we had Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. against Mustache Mountain at the big January York Hall show, and that was a very difficult booking decision because somebody was going to get pissed off. And I probably wouldn't have put them in the ring together, but it did create that whole vibe of like, I can't believe we're seeing this match. You've got...
Oh, that was, yeah, spectacular.
WWE versus New Japan, and New Japan won. But yeah, that's basically, that was Andy making his bed there. And he's kind of been punished for it a little bit later than I expected, but WWE have very much been looking at people that are in his promotion and are central to like his booking. And that is absolutely personified with Ginny, because he only has a women's division because of Ginny. Like, Ginny was the women's division. They booked
every show, every match centered around Ginny.
Completely. Like, from the start of, we're looking like 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
They started booking Ginny to beat other people. Like, before they had a division at all, and then like 18 months later they brought the belt in just so Ginny had that prop to say, look, I really am the best, even though they'd already kind of proved that by having to beat everybody. And then the whole long term goal was build somebody up to beat Ginny, and instead of getting that long build, it's like, shit, we've only got one show before we can't use her anymore, who's available? And I don't mean to make that sound bad for like Jamie Hayter, but like, it didn't feel like there was any kind of a build for this at all. Yeah. It was just like, shit, we need
to. Yeah, she beat Millie McKenzie like the week before and then suddenly beats Ginny, which nobody else has done for 2 years. Well, yeah, obviously it was rushed, to say the least.
Yeah, well, I was talking to Ian Hamilton about this, and he was saying like the original match that Jamie Hayter was booked in for that Portsmouth show was Brandi Rhodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So can you imagine? I presumably Brandy would have won that match. Would that have been the match they put on here? Would it have been Ginny and Brandy Rhodes? I don't even... Was she even available?
I'm not sure. She probably would have... No, because she wasn't surely in Japan. So yeah, maybe she could have stuck around. But yeah, it's...
That would not have been an ideal situation for them.
That would have been an odd one, to say the least. how did you think the match came off?
Not great. Jamie Hayter is an absolutely perfect heel. I think she's one of the best women's heel wrestlers in Europe.
Yeah.
Like, her mannerisms as a heel are sensational. I thought the work she did... did you see the Eve Wrestling Queendom show in the end? Or not?
I haven't yet, no. Sorry.
There's, in the War Games match, all the stuff that she was doing on the outside of the ring was world-class heel stuff, like pulling someone's arm through the... I think it's Emi Sakura's arm. Someone's arm, anyway. Pulling it through the cage and like trying to drag it into the cage wall and stuff. But the work in that match was great. And that's what she's good at. But here she was kind of forced into a de facto babyface routine that just didn't suit her in the slightest. And in order to make up for that, they tried to throw out some kind of big spots, and they couldn't have had a long time to prepare that. The Rana off the top rope in this match terrified me.
Ooh, they only just like rotated it. Oh, it wasn't good. Yeah,
I don't know what went wrong there. Like, one of them didn't realize what was happening until it was too late, and the prospect of one of them getting dumped on their head off the top rope was extremely real, and that was one of several examples that was just awkward, but that was the most dangerous looking. So yeah, I was worried about this all the way through it, and I don't know, if I'm Andy Quilden, I'm just so angry with the situation that I've been put in there, because that was something that he could have built to. That's something he could have...
Yeah, he had it in his back pocket.
Yeah, I'm sure he had that in mind to be like a big match at some point down the line, and not only has he lost that big match, and lost the big pop of the changeover, but he's ended up with a champion that's in a role that's completely foreign to her, and presumably they'll do the smart thing and just have her heel.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because continuing on with her as a babyface, I just don't think is any way to go about it. And it would not take much to just flip her back heel.
No, absolutely. Like one angle at the cockpit, and yeah, they can realign the division, but certainly a lot more work to do after the Ginny stuff has fallen through. She's off the WWE.
On the plus side, great opportunity for Jamie Hayter, and I'm sure she'll kill it long term.
Yeah, because they always had like a core of like Jamie Hayter and Zoe Lucas like doing like these Portsmouth shows in RevPro like a couple of years ago. So this is almost like a long time service achievement for Hayter, like propping up the like very, very early women's division when like they weren't promoting it at all on cockpit shows or anything. It'd be nice to see Zoe Lucas back because she's quite good now and they can move her up as like a RevPro original.
I think an ideal situation for them would have been if in January when Ginny... is it broken wrist? I can't remember what she did now.
Yeah, that really hurt them as well, the injury earlier.
When she got that injury, they'd just gone, okay, we'll just reset and done a tournament then. They could have had Ginny at this point ready to challenge again and come up short, therefore having their new champion look better for having beaten Ginny.
It's unfortunate that her like reign as the champion has been poor because like the build up to that championship was quite good and the cockpit stuff they were doing last year was very compelling. But yeah, since the title win, she got injured and only had that one defense in the York Hall, I think.
Yeah, that was it.
So yeah.
Yeah, so with the benefit of hindsight, that would have been the ideal thing to do, but obviously they toughed it out, stuck with Ginny, and then she's left. So you win some, you lose some.
Absolutely, yeah. They won with Brooks and lost with Ginny.
Yeah, I know Andy Quildam was upset that he felt like WWE were kind of picking his roster dry. They were going after the people who work for him a lot. I could kind of see that. Some of the people that they've gone after are definitely guys of RevPro we're looking at using long term. But at the same time, there's still a lot of talent out there. So I think the Ginny thing is what really hurt him.
Absolutely. And Travis Branks, I think, were the two guys who he was using a lot, who now he can't at all. So it is interesting that RevPro have sort of been hit the hardest by the WWE UK stuff, which means they're essentially limited to only promotions that WWE wants them to be working.
Yeah. I think Progress would have been kind of gutted by this if it wasn't for the fact that everyone that is signed to WWE is allowed to work with Progress.
Oh, yeah. Well, which... I mean, that's the reason why they're signed to WWE, is like their work in progress. Like, I assume is what WWE or NXT guys are seeing most of and why, like, who they're selecting.
Hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
That and obviously the World of Sport guys who they've selected very, very interesting, which we'll get to later on when we discuss the UK Championship tournament.
Yeah, let's just finish up this RevPro show and then get into that chat.
Absolutely. I thought the Arrows of Hungary were really, really impressive. I think they've done another RevPro show as well as this, but yeah, they seem to be branching out a bit more after Icarus did well over 16 Karat weekend. And he's bringing Dover along with him in this act. Done a couple of shows in the UK, also a couple of shots for WXW. And yeah, I'd say they're almost like a new age Sumerian Death Squad with all the tattoos, like the more agile guy and the big guy and the European flavour. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, they've got a good look. And the first match that they had was with Gideon Gray and Rishi Ghosh, the Legion of Lords, so it was more of a storyline kind of match. This was like a let's see what you got in the ring.
Oh, yeah.
And they killed it. Absolutely killed it. Aussie Open have been fantastic this year.
I think
they have sometimes fallen into formula because it's easy to do, and especially when you've got Mark Davis, great hot tag, Carl Fletcher, great sympathy. It's very easy to do that with them. But in this match, they didn't do that. They did a little bit of it, and then they kind of took it in a different direction. And I thought this was kind of on a par with like the Mustache Mountain match that everyone loved from, I want to say, Lucha Forever last year. That kind of, when you think, what's a great Aussie Open match, you kind of think that match, and also the Mustache Mountain match from Fight Club Pro. So for them to kind of have that match with the Arrows of Hungary, kind of that's testament to how good they are. I think especially Icarus. Like, he's really good. He's a good pickup.
Yeah, Aussie Open are putting together a hell of a run for the Britty, the tag team, the Britty.
I think they're head and shoulders above everyone else at the moment.
And they've got World Tag League, where they'll get free matches. I'm sure they'll be able to diversify those matches and get a lot of time in the ring to bolster that resume. Their match with the Hunter Brothers at WXW London was awesome, which I got to see live. They've just been on every single show they're on. They have a really good match. Like, as you say, it may be sometimes formulaic, but if you don't see them really, really often, I don't think that matters too much. Like, they're very, very exciting. They have incredible closing stretches. I hope they get to do a lot in this progress tag series that they're doing, and probably I think they'll win that. The eventual Thunder Bastard and Wembley, which would be really cool for them. And they've got World Tag Team League. So it's all coming up Aussie Open right now. But Arrows of Hungary as well. Very impressive showings now that they seem to be a more regular act going in Europe now.
Well, two matches in Rev Pro, I wouldn't call them regular. But
WXW as well.
Getting the name out there anyway.
Yeah.
The stuff we haven't talked about is all storyline stuff. Which I think is kind of interesting, but it's like you got the Josh Bodum storyline with Dan McGee. I think that's coming together quite nicely. I really like Legion of Lords, what they've got going on there. They're finally teasing something with Gideon Gray and Rishi Ghosh splitting. They've been like a tag team for like 5 years. So they've got that going on. I like what they're doing with Anti-Fun Police as an extension of that.
They're
using
fun.
Santos really well. Santos and Rishi Ghosh is a fun tag team that they've got. And the David Starr thing with El Fantasma, that got tremendous heat in the main event.
Oh, yeah. The way they're using David Starr is unlike how WXW and Progress are presenting him, like, in a completely different universe, basically. Like, he's such a shit talker. The low blow on Phantasma as soon as the match was restarted as a championship match was he's just so frustrating.
They'd done the same finish with Adam Brooks earlier in the night. Yeah. I just wish they'd had that conversation and just said to Adam Brooks, well, you can have the finish that way, just don't kick him in the nuts. Just do a deliberate DQ or get counted out or something, but just don't do the kick in the nuts, because that's the main event finish.
Can't have two finishes.
Two finishes exactly the same. Yeah. It rubs me up the wrong way.
But I do think if they put Star vs. Phantasma on in the York Hall this summer, I think that could do very, very well as like a semi-main event there. I think LP has... He's built up a groundswell of goodwill amongst the fans. You know, he's gone on from just being Kyle O'Reilly's best friend, as he introduced me and Matt Yano. He walked up to us and introduced himself as Kyle O'Reilly's best friend last summer, and we were very perplexed. But since then, he's done a lot of good stuff, and I think like a big York Hall title win would be awesome to see from him.
I think overall, this was a really strong show. Like, I was quite impressed with this when I came away from it.
Like I say, the sort of WWE UK news had permeated through the show, and I felt like everyone just had an extra spring in their step. Maybe Andy Key was fired up backstage, and obviously the Walter Chris Brooks match, a really standout performance from Brooks. He's really maturing as a singles guy now, and it's great to see. And also Walter's here in RevPro to fight the Japanese guys. So I think that is something we're going to be building to.
He hinted at doing Volta and Ishii, and I was like, oh, really? Sign me up.
That's the one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah,
but there's plenty of other matches, because like he hasn't wrestled like anyone from New Japan, so there's pretty much everything is fair game there.
Yeah. And obviously, they're doing Strong Style Evolved in, I think, 3 weeks, so we'll preview that on the next show and then review it on the show after that. So we're going to get very RevPro X New Japan heavy.
That's cool. So you want to talk about these WWE signings?
Definitely, yeah. So we have phase two of WWE UK going now. And obviously the UK Championship Tournament, the second one, but it's still called the same thing for some reason, is happening in the Royal Albert Hall of all things. that's going to be happening next Monday and Tuesday as we're recording. So it's an interesting place to have wrestling in the modern day. And also,
well, it was their spot, wasn't it? They used to do, like the Battle Royal at the Albert Hall, and they'd have all the, this was like 1991, they'd run shows there. WWE themselves would run shows there. So it was, wrestling wasn't like an arena sport in the UK necessarily then, but the kind of tours they did, you'd have like Bulldog and then like like nobody else. Hmm. Like you couldn't get any of the other big names on there. So that's where they ran that, as opposed to like 92 when they run SummerSlam at Wembley. They had like everybody. So I like that. I like the little throwback to WWF of the past.
And then they've hired a brand new batch of WWE UK wrestlers. Obviously, we have the big names in British Strong Style and Mark Andrews and Wolfgang for some reason already on the bill. But this new batch is feeling very similar to the roster that World of Sport had for their one-off special back in 2016.
And they've definitely looked at that and thought, well, who out of this is usable? And they've picked up like Ligero, Mastiff, Ashton Smith, Joe Coffey. I think he was on that, wasn't he?
Yeah. And so Kenny Williams as well.
Kenny Williams. Yeah, they've basically just taken everyone that they thought would be of any use to World of Sport and just left them to it. Yeah, good luck booking a show with what's left. You've got Grado, I suppose. But yeah, the whole World of Sport thing, I think the show they put on was bad.
Oh, yes.
And I don't see any chance of them putting on a good show anytime soon. The main coup for WWE was that they saw Zach Gibson as the big star of that show, and then he was the big star for Five Star Show as well before that got cancelled. And they saw him and went, yep, that's the guy. Mm-hmm. Sign him. And they did. They should have signed him before, to be honest with you. And I think Gibson has done a great job going out there, getting his name out. He's a terrific promo. He might be the best promo going in wrestling, because he can do that. He could do the promos that he does in front of any crowd. Whereas I think Trent Seven, who we always say like Trent Seven's a great promo, I think he does like that cheeky insider promo better than anyone else. But
he's the smarks, aka us.
Yeah, but like I don't think he has a promo that you can do in front of kids. Whereas like Zach Gibson can do his promos in front of absolutely anyone. He's that versatile, and I think he's going to get a shit ton of heat in these shows. Mm. I'm looking forward to.
They actually signed Gibson like outside of the batch of World of Sport signings. Like they did a big signing a month ago, but Gibson was around WrestleMania time.
Yeah, they deliberately did that specifically to sabotage Five Star.
Yeah,
which I appreciated because
I'm fine with them sabotaging Five Star.
I'm so glad that's just dead and gone, and we could just forget about
it. It's finally over. So yeah, the matches we got on the tournament bill for the Royal Albert Hall are Zach Gibson versus Jack Gallagher, Flash Morgan Webster versus Jordan Devlin, Joe Coffey versus Dave Mastiff, and Travis Banks versus Ashton Smith. And the winner of that tournament gets to face Pete Dunne, the WWE UK champion, the night afterward, also in the Royal Albert Hall. Do you particularly have an opinion over who should win?
I think the final is going to be Gibson and Travis Banks. I like the quarterfinals have turned out exactly how I wanted them to. When I looked at the original lineup, I started picking people off going, for fuck's sake, don't have Joe Connors in there.
Mm.
I don't want him, and I don't want him. And I just looked down the list thinking it's basically a list of people who WWE have seen before and didn't rate particularly highly. And those are all the guys that have gone out. And now they've kind of got down to more of a nitty-gritty situation. I think Mastiff is just there to put over Joe Coffey, to be honest. I don't think he's going to get any kind of a long-term traction in WWE. Ashton Smith is a perfectly talented guy, but like he's just there to put Trav over. It's the top end of that I'm more interested in, because I'll be interested to see whether it's Flash or Devlin that they rate. Because whoever wins that match is clearly the one that they're more interested in pushing as a professional wrestler, so that'll be interesting. And Gibson and Gallagher, they have so much history. If they can have one of their great matches, then that'll be the match of the tournament.
Yeah, I think the final will most likely come down to Banks and Gibson. Banks is the Progress champion, and they'll probably hype him up as such, to be honest. But yeah, I think Gibson is the guy you're going to be looking at.
If they go to form like what they did in January, they had Pete Dunne, not January this year, January like
the year
before. they had Pete Dunne was the star of the tournament. The tournament existed to get him over, but then he lost the final so that there was somebody else got over as well. And I don't know if the aim here is to do that with either Travis Banks or possibly Joe Coffey. I'd be surprised, because I don't think Coffey's really on a level where I'd want to see him wrestle in a major event. Whereas Gibson, I feel, would bring a lot of heat to like anything that he did. And Travis Banks is just a very good wrestler. So, yeah, I can see them going either way.
There's also a women's four-way. Isla Dawn versus Ginny versus Kelly Kelly versus Toni Storm. And the winner of that will face Shayna Baszler the night after. Is this Toni Storm finally getting in with WWE? Or is someone else winning this?
I don't know. Tony's just booked everywhere, though, isn't she? So it's kind of hard to get a read on.
Is she just doing the ZSJ Ibushi run here?
I think she'll end up there eventually. It's just whether. I think they wanted to work on her promos. I think that's what it comes down to. If she could talk. Well, she can talk, but she's not a great promo. Whereas
well,
I think
she's certainly not a WWE talker. Yeah, like she does the awkward talking.
Ginny's more of a promo.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So I think even though Ginny is less of an in-ring talent, I think that's probably where they go here.
But then I can't imagine Ginny being in there with Shayna Baszler.
Yeah, that's
it's business killing.
Yeah. So I think Ginny's the one that they will probably look to use in this capacity, but at the same time, yeah, I don't see her winning the match. So, it's a tricky one. I guess Toni is kind of a no-brainer because she's the best wrestler out of the four. But at the same time, it's like, if they're going to push her into that match, it's like, are they looking to push her long term? I don't know. Unless she's signed a deal of some kind, I just can't see her getting a big deal out of the Baszler match. You know what I mean?
And I guess the big question over all of this is, are you actually interested in the WWE UK brand? Is it going to be that you keep coming back to? Yeah. And that just seems odd, because this is almost like them trying to appeal to us and like our group of fandom, and it just like it kind of misses the mark. It isn't really what what we want necessarily.
Well, I was saying this to a bunch of the guys the other day. When they had the original lineup for the tournament, I said to them, like, if Progress put that tournament on, we would be shitting all over it.
Oh yeah, like with some of the names they had in that first tournament. And in the first round of this, which we aren't going to watch because it was in a tent in a music festival.
I kind of think they probably could have got something out of El Ligero, but I'm kind of surprised they put Ashton Smith in the spot that I would have put El Ligero in.
Yeah, it's like, surprising. Especially since they destroyed his gimmick for to put him in a tent.
Yeah, kill his gimmick, job him at Download, and then don't put him on TV. I don't know.
So yeah, it it just seems like obviously it's being done to counteract World of Sport and nip it in the bud before it can become any sort of threat in the UK market, if I'm speaking cynically. But if Triple H has even like an ounce of credibility when he says, oh, we've been planning this for a long time and World of Sport just sped it up, then he may need to go back to the drawing board on the UK brand, because it just isn't anything, and the way that belt has been used has been just so insignificant.
It's just a prop. Does anyone even look remotely close to beating Pete Dunne for that title? Every time they book him in a match and they say the UK title's on the line, I'm like, oh, Pete's winning then.
Yeah. Like, they had him against Connors at the start of the year in Progress, and that angle was universally shat on. So it's been a torrid time for the WWE UK brand. It's kind of seeped into Progress in an unwelcome way.
It's a pretty-looking belt. I'll give them that much, but like that as a brand, it's just been completely worthless. I don't care about this. I care about it just about enough to like pass comment on what the tournament brackets look like. But if I had a choice between watching this and watching pretty much anything else, I'd probably go for the other option. Mm. Like if it was one of my normal promotions, like a New Japan, All Japan, something like that, I'd just watch that instead.
And when you compare it to the way RevPro has merged into New Japan storylines, like with Dominion yesterday and Ishii and Suzuki beating the shit out of each other to build up to presumably a match in RevPro, there's certainly a difference in quality of how the two merges have been presented, I suppose.
I think the problem is WWE keep trying to portray this as important and it isn't, whereas New Japan always portray like the RevPro belts are something that happens low down on their cards.
Yeah.
Which makes me sit there and go, yeah, that's about where it should be.
It's not insulting your intelligence. They're not saying Pete Dunne's going to be main eventing WrestleMania, defending the UK championship. Like, they're not just like promising the
not
world.
Not unless he grows like 6 inches.
Small boy belt. Oh, dear.
I do love Pete Dunne. Don't get me wrong.
No, absolutely.
But like, If you're going to be like a massive WWE star, then you're going to kind of need to be a realistic opponent for somebody like Braun Strowman. And let's face it, there are not a lot of British wrestlers who are going to be in that bracket. I pretty much just say Chris Brooks. And the problem with that is he doesn't want to do it. But yeah, Volta doesn't want to do it, so that pretty much limits your options, doesn't it?
And here we are. So, WWE UK Phase 2, I think that pretty much puts a bow on it. I don't know if we'll particularly review the UK Championship Tournament. I guess we can mention it, and if they
are they even showing it?
Come from it. I think it's on the network.
It's not live, is it? So.
Okay, well, there we go.
The fact that we haven't actually looked, I think that kind of speaks volumes about it.
If there's any, like, if they actually start doing anything with it other than just countering everything ITV does, we might talk about it a bit more. But as it is, it's just kind of a cliff note.
Yeah, it's the fuck ITV project, which I kind of approve of, but at the same time, it's just like big man WWE with his billions of dollars just coming and stomping on a little TV project just because he can. If it was a TV project that could be good, then I'd probably be more upset about it, but they're just stomping on something that I think is going to be shit, so I'm kind of fine with that.
Yeah, but it doesn't enter our remit because, I mean, ITV are aiming that at a different market to us, and WWE are countering that with a different thing that isn't aimed at us, and it's just...
Well, Gibson and Gallagher will be good.
Yeah.
Just watch that match. That'll be on the network somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be fine.
Shall we move on to OTT and Scrappermania, which happened, as you say, 4 weeks ago, but we're only just getting around to it, because a lot of shows happened like 4 weeks ago that weekend, and this one just filtered down to now. But it had like a big main event.
It was week after like Strong Style, so
yeah,
I was still catching up on stuff from that weekend, so it just kind of slipped through the cracks for me. So I literally just saw it today. Although I saw Osprey and Riddle when they put that up on YouTube.
Yeah.
Meltzer went 4 3/4 on that match. And I'm pretty certain that's what I gave it.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a really good match.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't think it was as good as the match they had WWN Super Show Mania weekend. And let me tell you why. Because that match had a focus with Ospreay's neck, and it had Riddle showing a completely different side of himself, because he came out there and he really targeted the neck. He was a complete asshole. And you got to see a different Matt Riddle. Whereas this match, the OTT one, was Riddle doing the hits, Ospreay doing the hits, and then them doing counters to everything. And it was a fucking great match, but it just didn't have the same investment for me. It wasn't like a completely different kind of match that you'd never see anywhere else, like the one was at WWN. What I like about it, though, is that Ospreay and Riddle have established a rivalry here. Like, the matches that they had, the one in progress, when was that? End of 2016?
Yeah, that was Riddle's first match in the UK. The infamous one, where he got paraded out of the ballroom.
Yeah, that was just a sprint. Riddle won in, 9 minutes or something. And then you got to the WWN one over Mania Weekend, where they got to tell more of a story. And then this is, this is two fantastic wrestlers doing lots of wrestling stuff against each other. So they've had an interesting little trilogy there. I think at some point you're going to see them for in a major setting. I just don't know when or what it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, these two are just next level athletes and performers, and the shit they do just it boggles my mind. But I can't remember the exact spot, but I think Riddle hit a powerbomb on Ospreay. He flipped him over and then kneed him all in one motion, and it was just incredible. And from that point, the match really lifted off into its closing stretch. So really, whenever these two fight and whenever they fight anyone else, it feels like a different environment to what you would usually get from pretty much anyone else, because they can just do stuff that nobody else can.
It's not only the whole thing of Ospreay can do flips. We all know he's a great flippy wrestler.
But he's brought the intensity and he's brought that that realism to it.
Yeah, I thought his strikes in this were amazing. And that's going up against somebody who in Riddle, who prides himself on his strikes. But yeah, Ospreay was right in his face all the way through this.
Yeah, it's not like the Lucha flippy doos where it's all incredible, but it just looks like a street performance. Like, it has that sort of legitimacy of a real fight while also being the Matrix, but in real life. And that's sort of what we watch wrestling for. It's that great fusion of realism and fantasy. And I think these two nail it based on what we want from an indie match. This is the pinnacle, really.
Yeah, it really is.
Not the same kind of Okada Omega storytelling stuff, but just the physicality of it. It's just instant satisfaction.
Imagine when they add that storyline in there, because that's what got me about the WWN match, is they had that storyline as well.
Yeah.
Imagine if they have a long-term storyline where there's added layers, I don't know of what, but of something. And that's going to really take it to the next level. And it's already a phenomenal match.
If they got to do it in a big situation somewhere, it seems like New Japan would be the most likely place, but obviously Riddle has his issues with Japan right now. But that seems like something you can get over at a push.
If he gets booked in G1, if you got Riddle in G1 and Ospreay got bumped up to heavyweight and that was a G1 main event of a show, I think you'd see something pretty fucking special.
Yeah, and it's something that could definitely happen in a couple of years. Riddle's issues can be overcome, I believe.
I hope so.
And then also, I thought the main event really delivered here with that kind of big story, big picture stuff going into it. And I'm really digging Jordan Devlin's OTT title reign here. And I hope it goes on forever and ever and ever, because he's really embraced that role, and having an Irish ace in OTT really sets him apart from every other promotion. And I really liked the style of this match with the NWA link, which they hyped up, the mat work at the beginning, and just, yeah, how physical it felt, how gritty it felt, and Devlin overcoming Sabre Jr. It felt good. It felt not like Super Cena-esque. It just felt like, yeah, he survived everything Sabre Jr. threw at him and then threw his best shot at Sabre Jr. and it got him.
Yeah, I like what they did with... Because Sabre just beats people up. It doesn't matter who he's in there with. He was in there with Hiroshi Tanahashi this year, and he just beat him up.
Yeah.
He just dominated him for the whole match. Naito, exact same story. Ishii, same story. So you've got a guy who... He goes into matches and just completely dominates people. And Devlin kind of held his own a little bit throughout this match.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an interesting story to me because Sabre doesn't ever let people look like they're on his level. And this is as close to it as I've seen in a long time. So yeah, he obviously rates Devlin.
I get what you mean. Like, Devlin wrestled this match with that same kind of physicality that Sabre brings to other people. Like, he's fighting all these showmen in New Japan and, like, bringing the technical stuff to them. And Devlin sort of fought Sabre with his own style. He fought fire with fire. And again, that NWA link helped that out, like, them telling the story of that. It sucked that Sabre missed the previous show to this, or, like, the previous show to that, because of the snow, had to cancel the show, and then he couldn't do a promo for this, because in, like, the promo package, it was just, like, Devlin talking to Sabre, and Sabre, like, responding from afar via New Japan promos. It was well-edited, but, yeah, like, obviously it was missing that extra step of having Sabre, but then they made up for it.
I don't want to talk about the promos on this show, because I think they were really well done, but before we finish up on Devlin and Sabre, I like the way that Devlin dug into his history to help to overcome Zach. It didn't work. So he went and got, like, the Paul Tracy, the twisting T-bone thing that he does. He did the coup de grace, the Finn Balor double stomp.
Of course.
But none of this got it done. I like that it was his move that got it done. And I also like that it was, like, he was waiting for Sabre to make a mistake. Because Sabre does make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the gimmick of his character, is, like, he gets too cocky and he'll try and do some kind of cheeky roll-up variation, and that's when you can get him. And that's what happened in this match. Whereas, like, I like that he didn't have to, like, fight Sabre at his own game all the way through and then beat him at his own game, so I wouldn't have bought that.
He got kind of lucky to beat Sabre here. Sabre had him, but then got caught in a position where the package pile driver could be used, and then Devlin just smashed him with it.
Yeah, and I like that they put that finish over as devastating as well. That works for me.
So I think they're doing an incredible job with Devlin right now as their top champ, and renaming the title was a bit of a stroke of genius, because it was always a bit weird calling it the NLW title and didn't really have any significance to someone outside of Ireland, or someone who hadn't been watching wrestling for that long. So having Devlin as the first OTT champion, it really feels significant, and I think they can do some great stuff with that going forward, such as this match. Anything else on the undercard that really stood out to you?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the tag title match. It was very hijinksy, and it was, when I was talking about promos, I specifically had this match in mind because they did the big video feature of Angel Cruz and Be Cool. And their trip to the stadium, the whole stuff with all the gunfights and the what did he use? Was it a chainsaw? An angle grinder or something? I can't remember. But, like, that whole video package I thought was supremely well done, led into the whole entrance, and then Gibson and Sterling coming out and giving it the whole heel heat routine. That whole thing worked splendidly well. I thought paid off perfectly, and I like the Angel Cruisers. They'd overcome a lot to get to that point, but they really didn't need to win, and I'm glad that they realized that they didn't need to win.
Yeah,
and that's how the match went down. There was a lot of good stuff in the match as well. The samurai sword and the AK-47 is just, it was so ridiculous, it was so over the top. that it was perfect.
Oh yeah, like these Angel Cruisers matches are mental, and also the way they involve Team Prick is very interesting, and I like that they're sort of doing it as babyfaces now, because they had that massive British Strong Style match, and then Cruz, Be Cool, and Tyler Bate facing them, and that was just like a trip, and one of probably OTT's best match last year, to be honest, even though it was just a mental comedy match, it was just so well put together. Felt almost like a Dragon Gate match in execution. So yeah, they do feel like unique parts of OTT cards. And also, I like that they're almost an evolution of those early comedy matches OTT had when we first started watching OTT. The undercards were filled up with all these six-man comedy tag team matches.
Gymnasties and stuff.
Yeah, the lads from the flats.
Yeah.
And now they've sort of evolved to this point where it's a big part of the show and they can construct such long matches as well. Like, the length of these matches and how intricately planned out they are is a lot of fun. And nobody else is really doing it in Europe.
It was probably a little bit long, because it was like 20 minutes long and they had all the intro and everything in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it probably went a little long. They could have got there a little quicker, but I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, and this on top of the British Strong Style match from last year. I think Cruz and Be Cool have earned themselves a permanent place on these big OTT cards, and it's something completely unique. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing more.
It is a concern that OTT historically have really struggled to get Irish talent onto the shows, and it's been a case in the past where they didn't have talent that was ready, and it's taken them time to build guys up. But at the same time, you don't want to throw them in there too quickly into these big matches. Because I was kind of looking at Jeff Cobb and Tomohiro Ishii and Keith Lee versus Minoru Suzuki and looking at them going like, why isn't there an Irish guy in one of those matches? And then it kind of occurred to me that if you did put an Irish guy in with like a debuting Tomohiro Ishii, he's just going to get shit on.
It would be overwhelming, yeah. But I think what they are doing with their younger guys right now is really good. They've got these contender shows going on, which is giving them main show experience, which I think is useful. And also the two young Irish guys we saw at the beginning of this show, Scotty Davis and LJ Cleary, are making big strides. I think if anything should happen to Jordan Devlin, if she go to WWE at any point in the next few years, Scotty Davis is right there to pick up the pieces. I think he's gonna be their next Jordan Devlin, and you can already see him putting it together. And he's like Tyler Bate age. He's Tyler Bate's age when Tyler Bate was a couple of years ago, if that makes any sense. So he's like what Tyler Bate was. So I think that's quite exciting to see how he'll improve in the next couple of years. And LJ Cleary is just a ton of fun. And he'll definitely have a place on these cards as well. They're putting the pieces together slowly but surely, and I think soon enough they won't have to lean so heavily on imports to fill out these big cards.
I really like Valkyrie as well.
Yeah.
I think she's got a ton of potential. Like, I hadn't seen her wrestle before this show, but obviously Sami Zayn is the kind of person who will, she's a very giving wrestler. She'll make her opponent look really strong. I thought she made Charlie Morgan looked like a million bucks in the Eve Wrestling Queendom main event. Didn't have quite so much success with Valkyrie because there's less experience there, and this is like a far less important match than that one was. But as in terms of like a mid-card match that had to go on after Ospreay Riddle, I thought they did really well. And Valkyrie, I think she's in a good spot because you had this this pool of talent in European women's wrestling that was very shallow. We go back a couple of years ago when we did that first Euro draft, and we were really struggling for people.
Yeah.
But now you've got Charlie Morgan, you've got Casey Owens, you've got Laura DiMatteo coming good, you've got Millie McKenzie. Valkyrie can slot into that pool of talent, that new pool, and I see big things for her.
Yeah, they've got that's definitely an exciting part of the Irish growth of talent, and I think Katie Harvey sort of maturing them is going to be exciting as well, because she's excellent and she can impart her wisdom to Valkyrie and Debbie Keitel, and yeah, we'll see what they can do. And yeah, it's certainly a different part of what OTT are doing. Obviously, we talk about Davis and Cleary and all the other guys they have on the contender shows. But yeah, they have the women coming through as well, so it'll be exciting to see, you know, fresh women's talent out of Ireland, because obviously we're sort of growing more familiar with our new women in Britain. Obviously Millie McKenzie's stealing all the headlines in that regard. But we'll see what OTT can produce as well. You know, their women's division is coming through slowly but surely. They had the all-women show a couple of months ago, so they're starting to put the pieces together. But yeah, I think we Sarah and Sarah on the Sarah and Sarah podcast lamented about the positioning of this match after Ospreay versus Riddle without an intermission, which kind of just shot them on arrival.
That's a really tough spot for anybody. You could say it's a death spot that they've. Do you think they've deliberately put them in it? I don't know.
I'd hope not. I think they were more thinking, oh, we'll like main event the first half with the women, but yeah, putting them on after Ospreay and Riddle, which nobody could follow, is yeah a death sentence. So I think they should probably think better about that.
I think the crowd was still struggling to get over Ospreay and Riddle when Cobb and Ishii was on. Like if I was Cobb and Ishii, it had a lasting impact on them. Would not have wanted to have followed that. Yeah. That Ospreay Riddle match, it was that good.
Yeah, we neglected to say that they put it on the YouTube channel for free. So, I mean, that's where you first saw it. So, that is a really smart move from them, because obviously we talk about Progress getting big after they put Chapter 13 up for free. I think a lot more people will see OTT or like give them a chance. Like, they'll say, oh, OTT, that sounds cool, but won't actually ever look into it because there's the paywall. Now there's at least a chance to look into one of their best matches ever.
I remember when we first started doing this podcast, I was reluctant to buy, like, a single OTT show because I was like, well, only the main event's going to be any good, so what's the point? But the standard of the shows has improved drastically over the past 2 years. So I don't think you're wasting your money anymore. It's a case of balancing what subscriptions you do have to try and make room for it. There is a lot of choice out there, to be fair.
Yeah, it's not something I subscribe to every single month, but you know, when something like Scrappermania rolls around, I'll look into it. And obviously you can sort of time it right so you can watch a bunch of contender shows in a row, which is what I'm planning to do in a couple of days, just like watch two or three contender shows over a 2 or 3 day period, just like see how those young'uns are doing.
Do a bit of scouting for the Euro draft.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because that's coming up. We've got to be prepared.
Well, that's about it, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. We've sort of we've blasted through this, but I think we have talked about a fair amount, and obviously next time is the big preview of Strong Style Evolved, which is going to be the big event of the summer, and also we've got Will Ospreay's Japanese promotion with actual Japanese people in it.
I'm kind of upset I can't go to that because I'm actually doing like an all-day drinking session that day. But my intention is to try and go to Fight Club Pro the day after, and then Strong Style Evolved is like the Saturday and Sunday. I'm definitely on the Saturday
weekend.
Definitely doing Saturday. I've got my ticket. It's in front of me. So I'll be in Milton Keynes.
Ready for that New Japan house show.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. That's what we've always wanted. We've always wanted a Ink Loss, Suzuki Gun versus Chaos, 8-man.
It makes me laugh that Ring of Honor did like a full tour and we didn't pay any attention to it at all.
Well, do you really want to watch all those Punishment Martinez matches?
Yeah, I just don't want to watch the rest of it.
Alas, they have fallen out of our peripheral vision. What can you do?
What can you do? Sign off. That's what you can do.
Do you have anything to plug on?
Head over to rearviewreviews.com. I've been reviewing a bunch of weird and unusual Japanese wrestling of late. The latest promotion I looked at was, I don't even know how you pronounce it. Is it Ryukyu?
Ryukyu. From Okinawa.
Dragon. Yeah. They put a show up on Japanese TV and I watched it and reviewed it. So there's that.
My life goal is to retire to Okinawa and live like Ryukyu Dog Dingo.
Dingo dog, isn't it? Or is dog? No, it's Dog Dingo, you're right.
And you can follow me at Another Ollie on Twitter, and also read my reviews on Voices of Wrestling, and listen to that other podcast over at Post Wrestling. Shall we sign off then, on?
Yeah, that'll do us for today.
We'll Thanks see for joining you next us. Time.
Ta-ra!